Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planting leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
Okay, well, good morning, everyone. I know you've already started, so it's a little bit of a, for me, catch-up. So what I want to do is I want to kind of go around a little bit. I know you've already done this, but just to get a real simple context of where you're at in ministry and kind of your interest in the whole church planting as well as an Asian American or planting with Asian Americans. Just give me a little context on that. So let's start with, if I can start with you.
My name is Jeff. I'm from Vancouver, British Columbia.
Oh, okay.
Planting a church in the heart of Vancouver.
Last church plant, we planted two churches last year. One was in Vancouver with a gentleman named Phil Young, a Chinese-Canadian. And we helped them launch, and they're doing well, called Hope City Church. And then we also planted a church near in Fullerton, California. So Charlie is a catalyst for that. So, you know, and Charlie's from Nebraska originally, right? Or from?
No, I'm from Texas.
Texas, I'm sorry, right? But you lived in Nebraska.
Ministered in Nebraska. By the way, I'm here to recruit as well. So yeah.
And also for those of you who are interested in Vancouver, know people, Charlie, we like to resource the Free Church's vision is not just for the free. Yeah. So they are part of what we call our incubation. So we have currently three churches that are incubating with us in our church. And so they have about 30 people from their ministry. We have a Hispanic congregation that's incubating with us, second generation Hispanic American. The third group is college students from Cal Poly Pomona. And so that pastor will be here a little bit later as well, Dave Young. So let me introduce myself. I know DJ, you probably introduced yourself already. My name is Ray Chang. I am Korean by heritage. I was born in Korea, but I came to the States when I was six. So when I came to U.S. Back in 1973, there were hardly any Koreans that I could think. I mean, so like Koreatown was really like maybe two stores. there was no whole Olympic Boulevard in Vermont and all that. And so I remember when my parents, by the way, the first English word that I ever learned when I was in America, I was watching TV and watched the Flintstones. So the first American vocabulary was yabba dabba doo. That was my English vocabulary, and so I would say that all the time. But growing up was interesting because being an Asian among sort of a sea of Anglos, I grew up in South Pasadena and then Bellflower and then Irvine, actually, when Irvine was all orange groves. We moved to Irvine in 1976. And so I was like, in Woodbridge High, I went to school here, there were maybe like five Asians. Now that, I don't know, it's probably a lot larger than five. So growing up in Irvine, in a predominantly Anglo culture, I had to deal with sort of the diversity, the multi-ethnic challenge. And so I went through the stage, where I think a lot of Asian Americans can identify with is what we call sort of this cultural conflict. Sort of this, you know, who am I? You know, this bicultural challenge. Am I Korean? Am I American? And back then, it was a little bit more accentuated because we didn't have this whole second-gen movement that we're seeing now. And so I became a Christian. I went to a Korean church, hated it. But because that was my heritage, I kind of went. But I also went to an American church where I got saved at the age of 13. It was a church called Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa. A guy named Chuck Smith was a senior pastor. And so I kind of had both feet in both areas of ministry and kind of growing up in both. So I have a unique perspective, I think, because I was involved in both sets of ministry. I became an English pastor of a Korean church. I was a youth pastor. I was a chundosa of a Korean church. And then I became an EM pastor. But I was also on staff of a church called the First Evangelical Free Church of Fullerton. A guy named Chuck Swindoll was my senior pastor. And so I got licensed and ordained through that church. Went out to D.C., planted a church, a multi-ethnic church, and then came back. In D.C., that's where actually I met DJ. Well, DJ and I met in seminary. But the first person that I wanted to bring on staff was DJ. And DJ came as my associate. And we planted this church back in 1996, an early multi-ethnic church. And as a result of that, we got to see that church blossom and grow. That church is about 3-4 people out in D.C. So anyway, when we came back out to L.A. after planting Ambassador, I got on staff at the church that I had left, Fullerton. And then at Fullerton, I
God gave me the vision of saying, what if we could launch another multi-ethnic church in Southern California? So out of Fullerton, back in 2003, we launched Ambassador Church, our second one here in LA, or actually in North Orange County. We started with 11 people. Most of them were seminary students from Talbot, and that has blossomed and grown. In the last maybe like we're about 12 years old. For about 10 years of our ministry, we're about 100, 200 people, second gen, mostly young families and college young adults. In the last maybe 3 months, we went from about 250 to about 500, and a crazy growth. And part of that has to do with some incubation, but we have all these new people coming to our church. So it's been a little bit of an exciting challenge. So our goal here today is not just to tell you and data dump a lot of information. And we're going to do some of that so you'll have something to walk away with. But I want this to be an opportunity for us to be able to discuss from our context. This is a unique forum because we have different cultures represented. We have Hmong, we have Cambodian, we have Vietnamese, we have Chinese, we have Korean. And we're going to have you introduce yourself. We met at Expo East. So you're planting a church out in
Oklahoma City.
So I'm going to have you introduce yourself in a second. So the diversity that we bring is going to be part of the learning. And so one of the things that DJ is going to be doing is he's going to give you some of the facts and some of the stats. But we want to be a very practical seminar. So in addition to that, because you've come here, we're going to give you guys free lunch today. So we're going to order lunch for all of you and as a way of saying thank you for coming. And then we also want to be a continual resource for you in the future. So I'm going to introduce two people, actually my friend Matt back there. Matt is currently on staff at Fuller Seminary as a director of church planting for the whole school. So give us a little background on your church planter as well.
Yeah, I grew up in Washington, D.C., so we all sort of have similar connections. I've been part of about 5 church plants, and 2 of them as a lead planter, one in Arlington, one in downtown L.A. Just handed off the downtown L.A. church plant in 2014. And started working at Fuller starting last year. I direct the church planning program there. And,
So you know Matt, huh?
Yeah, we have
small world.
Okay. So Matt, one of the unique things that's happening among Asian Americans is God is allowing, especially among the next generation, to be in places like Fuller, where he is the first director of church planting for the whole school, and they are starting now a certificate program in church planting.
And an MA and
DMA. DMA, wow. So Matt's been a catalyst for that. Matt was in the East Coast, went to Gordon-Conwell, and got his doctorate at Biola. Those are exciting things, you know, that God is doing at even an academic institution. Tell us about what God's doing at Oklahoma City.
I'm Jason. I'm currently the executive pastor at a church called New Life Bible Church in Norman, Oklahoma. And I kind of born and raised in Oklahoma City. So we'll be planting a church in Oklahoma City next year, September 18th will be our first Sunday. And large population of second generation Indians. This is a place that a lot of Indians migrated to. There's a lot of blue collar work in the 70s and 80s. And so a large population of second generation Indians that will be planting this church along with Caucasians and Vietnamese, actually, a big population here too. We all kind of grew up in the same areas. Our parents all worked at the same places. And so it'll be an interesting church plant.
So you're also, you have a booth, so you could share a little about
RSI stewardship out here. We help with capital funding campaigns and helping churches just raise money. It's part of what we do on a consultative basis. So I do that on a contract basis. Yeah. I help churches in that capacity as well. So come by and visit the RSI booth.
If you're interested in getting a building and
yes,
the good stewardship.
Yes.
So Jason and I met in Orlando when we did this expo there. So good to have you back.
Yes.
All right, so we want to begin by kind of giving you an overview. So DJ, should we?
No, they're here so
okay.
First.
All right, so we're going to look at this whole kind of world that we live in terms of the Asian American context. And as the Asian American community is growing, and we'll see why it's growing so rapidly, it is the fastest immigrant group in terms of what's happening in the U.S. And it'll usurp, I think, the Hispanics, right, by 2015. And so we'll talk about some of that stuff. So we're going to be looking at the whole subject of how do you plant and why do you plant churches in this context.
Now, one of the things about just kind of overall arching vision for church planting is that in terms of the cultural diversity that's happening across the U.S., has sort of the church lost touch with the lost world? And so let's take talk a little bit out loud. Where is the church in relationship to what's happening? And we see this in Canada. Actually, Canada would probably be a few years ahead of us in terms of the separation of church and culture. But where are we now? Right? Let's just talk amongst ourselves. Has the church lost touch with the lost world? Right? Okay, you're shaking your head. Tell us why, especially in the Canadian context. There's Niebuhr talks about in terms of Christ's relationship to culture. Oftentimes, there's this sort of polarization of how do we impact culture? Do we become part of the culture? Do we conform to culture? Or do we transform culture? And how do we do that? How far are we supposed to remove ourselves from culture? So this tension that exists in terms of how do we truly reach our culture? Do we become like them to reach them? Or do we move so far away from them that we become so distinct that, and there's an element of both, right? There's a both and. I think one of the challenges as well, as we look at in the context that we're in, is that the world is becoming a very different place. What's happening in the States, we're talking not just from a social level, we're talking even from a cultural, ethnic level. Diversity in the U.S. is growing exponentially. We see that already in parts of Canada, you see a large percentage of population, like in Vancouver, with a large percentage of immigrants. And now that's even increasing as the migrants are moving from the Middle East all the way. But we see this happening in Oklahoma City. Think about Jason. I never thought of a large Indian population in Oklahoma. I know there's some in the Midwest. But there's a chart that is interesting, talking about the third most spoken language in some of the states in the U.S. So English is one, Spanish is two. Let's just play a little trivia. If you can guess with me, okay. What is the third most spoken language in California? I'll skip California. How about New York? Because this is making easy. What's the third most spoken language in New York? Just what took a wild guess? New York. No, you can guess, it's okay. I won't knock any points off. I won't take away your lunch, but just, what do you think? Third most spoken language in New York, the state of New York.
Mandarin.
Absolutely, okay, that's easy, okay? So we'll start easy like that. Okay, what's the third most spoken language in the state of Texas? Third most spoken language?
Vietnamese.
Vietnamese? Yeah. Oh, you two for two. Okay. So, what's the third most spoken language in California now?
Korean?
Nope. It's Tagalog. We have the largest population of Filipinos in California, as well as in Nevada. Now, what's the third most spoken language in the state of Georgia and Virginia, the two southern states? The most spoken language, apart from English and Spanish.
It's Korean.
Korean is the third most spoken language in the state of Atlanta. How many would say there's Koreans in Atlanta? There's some of the largest Korean churches in that city. In the state of Oklahoma, do you know what the third most spoken language is? Okay, it's actually Vietnamese. So what I'm just illustrating by that is that the world is changing. It's not only from a social, theological, it's also from an ethnic, a cultural perspective. And if the church doesn't kind of understand what's happening, like we talked about in Wisconsin, third most spoken language in Minnesota is Hmong. it's Hmong. And there are other places in the U.S. If you look at it, by the way, you can get the statistic from slate.com. I'm not sure if we have a slide. Oh, it's in the slide. Okay. So those are kind of interesting things, dynamics. And so part of the unique challenge that we have with the gospel as believers, as we plant churches, is that I believe that one of the greatest advantages for us in the gospel is to begin with the framework of looking at the broader context and saying, how can we reach them? The most open people oftentimes spiritually are not necessarily people that were born in the States, but were born outside of the States. One of the fastest growing groups in Germany in terms of conversion are Muslims who are migrants in Germany. And it's one of the fastest growing groups, as well as Chinese who are coming from China to the US to study. Again, you're a great example of that. And so those are the opportunities that we have with the gospel. And that's one of the things that we want to talk about in terms of church planting. Now, the reality is America has entered a post-Christian era, and from now on, we are planning to train future pastors as foreign missionaries assigned to an alien culture. The biggest mind shift change in the last 20 years is this. The pastors were often seen as sort of seminary professors or Bible teachers. Now pastors have to see themselves as foreign missionaries. Because not only do we see it from a cultural level, you know, in terms of kind of a you know, sort of a moral level, we also see it from a cultural level as well. So we talk about planting churches, and that's kind of the first topic that we want to talk about. And then we're going to talk a little bit about sort of the uniqueness of the Asian American context. Is, you know, why plant a church? Now, this is sort of redundant because you're here because some of you are thinking about church planting. This conference is one of the few conferences that is devoted solely to the starting of new churches. How many of you have been at Exponential before? Okay, and so how many of you, this is your first time? Okay, oh great, okay. So one of the unique things about this conference is really, it's sort of like a startup conference, and we're thinking about the bigger picture. And so I'm just gonna kind of give you a simple review of why do we plant churches. Well, in terms of a foundation, church planting is one of the most foundational things in terms of the expansion of Christianity. And we see that all the way from Matthew chapter 16, where Jesus says, upon this rock I will build my church. The first word ecclesia that's used in the Bible is actually Matthew 16. And it's really the establishment of the confession of faith. So when Jesus says to Peter, Peter, who do people say I am? Peter says, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. That becomes then the foundation of the movement of the church. And then Jesus says this. This is the most interesting part of the whole dialogue with Jesus and Peter. And then Jesus makes a statement, the gates of hell will not prevail. Now, here's the thing. Most of us think that the gates of hell will not prevail. Let me just ask you just a very simple question. Is it a defensive comment that Jesus is making, or is it an offensive? When Jesus says the gates of hell will not prevail. When a lot of people hear that, a lot of people take it from a defensive perspective, meaning that the church's job is sort of to fend off the gates of hell. Like hell is sort of coming, and we just have to protect ourselves from hell. If you look at it from the context of what Jesus, the church hasn't been established yet. And the point that Jesus is making is not that the church is on the defensive, but rather the church is on the offensive, that he is establishing a new community of people who hold to this confession. And our job is that we are on the gates of hell. We are right in front of the gates of hell. Our job is to sort of invade hell. And so church planting is the process in which we are moving forward God's kingdom. And so when Jesus makes that proclamation in Matthew chapter 16, it becomes the foundation of the role of the church. Our job is to proclaim the name of Jesus to all people. And so Matthew 28 continues that process with the Great Commission. Tim Keller makes the point that Matthew 28, the Great Commission, is really about planting churches. Because there are two things there that only in the local body you can do. One is baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, which is a community act. And secondly, teaching them to obey everything I've taught you, which is, again, it's not just self-obedience, but it's really obedience in the context of community. So Keller's point is that Matthew 28, the Great Commission, is really about planting churches, which I believe is what Christianity is about. It's not about solo faith, solo discipleship. It's really about community. It's about moving forth in community. And so we see that through the book of Acts. We see this and so forth. So that's sort of the quick biblical foundation of why we plant churches. So to establish a solid apologetic framework for building healthy, growing, reproducing church, a planter needs to know the why question before he can effectively recruit leaders, workers, seekers, prayer supporters. So the most important thing as church planters is to ask the big question, why? Why are we planting a church? And here's the exciting thing.
So how would you answer that question, neighbor nudger? Why? What's the most fundamental reason that you could think of? What's the first thing that comes? Why do we need to start a new church? One of the common assumptions is that people will say, man, there's so many churches in this area. Why do we start a new church? So let's talk out loud. Why do we need to start a new church?
Somebody to ask you.
There's still those who don't know Christ.
Okay. But why don't you just plug them into an existing church? Why start a new church?
Yes. They aren't doing it right.
I can do it better.
But there are people. What else?
A better sense of belonging.
Okay. A better sense of belonging.
New churches. Generational.
Part of that could be generational.
Absolutely.
What else?
Having a fresh kingdom mindset.
Okay. A fresh kingdom mindset. Have you guys ever been to a place where... maybe you were invited to a party or a gathering, and you were the new person. Everybody knew each other, and you were sort of the outsider. How does that feel?
That's awkward, right? And so if a friend invited me, you just tend to stick with that friend and just kind of go along until they introduce you to the whole great group. Well, oftentimes when a church gets established, that's what it becomes. It becomes almost like a social club, where it becomes hard to break into. And oftentimes the more established a church is, the harder it is for new people to connect. And as a result, when you have new congregations, just kind of from a sociological perspective, new churches attract new people, and especially lost people. And that's one of the reasons why. But every generation needs to start new churches because, again, there's a generational shift that takes place. Where generational shift used to take 50 years, now it's taking like 5 months. You know how quickly culture changes? You look at, you know, social media. I mean, what's happening in China is remarkable. I mean, China's changed. I went to China, Xi'an and Beijing recently. And it's funny, you know, you go there for a month and you see a whole city being built up. Literally, they have all these bamboo structures. And they're just building these high rises. Things are changing so radically. Not only in China, but all of Southeast Asia and all of Africa. So as a result of that, again, new forms. The gospel doesn't change, but the forms do, and because people are changing. I'll just skip some. But here's some practical reasons. And again, this is for you to sort of, people are to ask you, why are you starting a new church? Why can't you just stay with the immigrant church? Why can't you just stay, go plug in with an existing church? There's actually good reasons to plant new churches, and here's some reasons why. And so this is actually what we call sort of ammunition for apologetics. To give you a sort of a tool. Number one, when you plant a church, you grow faster. It's a strategy of kingdom expansion. Peter Wagner said the most effective evangelistic methodology under heaven is planting new churches. Without exception, the growing denominations have been those that stress church planting. New churches provide superior results. Some denominations have found that 80% of their conversion growth comes from new churches. One of the sort of the sad realities, when denominations stop planting churches, that's when the denominations begin to die. And whenever organizations stop planting churches. And so among the next generation, there is a greater need for new churches because, again, more people need to be one with the gospel. Secondly, one of the things in 2007 study on conversion growth, if you look at churches, all churches are sort of the gray. This is, it's kind of hard to see the color gradation, but if you look at this, in church plants, there's a higher percentage in year one, 33%. If you look in an existing church, it's only 3%. Year two, it's only 3% in an existing church. So in other words, existing churches, by the way, another stat, just to give you context, 50% of churches in the U.S. have not won, had one conversion growth last year. And what's staggering is that only a small percentage, so 3%. So I don't know what that number is in Canada, but it's probably, you know, maybe even more. But year two, look at this, 22% conversion growth. Year three, 20%, and year four is 13%, which shows you this, that church plants are much more effective in reaching new people. And so that's just pure kind of, it's both theology as well as sociology. And new unbelievers are attracted more to come to a new church than they are to an existing church. Now, let me ask you, why would you think that? What would be some of the reasoning behind that?
Well, I know things the way they are. And so when you have these people come in and shake up the foundation, they're like, I'm not comfortable.
That's a great point. You know, most people, if you ask the bottom line if they like change, people may verbally say they like change, but in reality, most people don't like change. Mark Twain had a great line. He said this, that the only person that likes change is a wet baby. Everybody else is resistant to change. And I think unless you're forced to change in some sense, like a wet baby, where you have something there that you need to change from, I think most of us prefer to be comfortable. And as a result, our comfort is one of the reasons that the church is sinking and struggling. That's why we're not planting churches, because it is uncomfortable. Here's another statistic, is that church plants evangelize better. And the older the church, the lower the conversion rate. So it's 89-1. If a church is 3 to 10 years old, it's 7-1. 0 to 3, it's 3-1. There's nothing more exciting than for a church to see people come to kind of a realization of faith and be transformed. But the older the church is, the less likely they're likely to see conversion. A classic example is talking about from Korea. D.A. Carson, who's a professor at Trinity, made this observation recently in one of his articles. He said that the view of Christianity in Korea is radically changing. Where Korea is sort of a modern, kind of a historical, sociological, kind of a miracle case study of a nation coming from a sort of an animist Buddhist culture to becoming 30-40% Christian. But what's been happening is that as the church has gotten older, that less people are coming to know Christ. And so among the second, third generation in Korea, Christianity, where a few years back, I was talking to a missions professor of one of the large churches in Korea called Sarang Church. And in this church, they said, 10 years ago, you would gather college students, sort of like Urbana, and you would have about 22-25% of the college students professing faith in Christianity, or at least saying that they're Christians, whether it's nominally or not. The recent study was almost like 8-10. So it's dropped dramatically. So among even the next generation in Korea, you see this rapid dip. And here's a challenge. As we get older, we become less evangelistic, and we become more inward focused. And so this is a second reason why church planting is. Third is that church plants develop leaders faster. There is no quicker way to develop leaders than in places where they're going to be on the forefront of leadership. Church planting is one of the best ways, because you kind of force people to lead. When DJ and I first planted a church out in the East Coast, we had people that had never served in ministry before started to learn how to serve. And so this is one of the most exciting things. In an existing church, so I was on a church staff, church was 50 years old. To be an elder, it took you like 20 years to be an elder. You just have to go through every little step. But in a new church plant, guess what? You become a leader day one. You're breathing, you're a leader, whoever has those gifts. And hopefully you kind of raise people. And people grow faster because of that. And that's the third thing, third apologetic. The fourth is that they're more innovative. This is where, as sort of multi-ethnic Asian American churches, we get to sort of create different models. We talk about the missional model, as Brian Sagio, I talk about the multi-site model, you talk about servant evangelism, all these great models that church plants get to do. And so here's the challenge for you to think about, is while the gospel, the message of the gospel is the same, the form in which the gospel is displayed can change. And so the first thing I just want to give you permission to do is to be able to think of forms that will be more effective in communicating really the essence and the core of the gospel. So the question is, why do we do what we do? And here's the reality. We do what we do is because that's what we've been taught and that's what we've experienced. So, I was in India a few years back, and it's funny, and as well as in Taiwan, very similar. A lot of these churches were planted, by Western missionaries. They came, and you look at the form of the church, and it looks almost exactly like the church that they, the person that planted from Springfield, Missouri, from, I was at this church in Taiwan, in Taipei, and it reminded me of a church in Mississippi in 1940, because that's when they planted that church. It was exact the same songs, the same, sort of culture. And so here's the thing, is that while those forms are good, there's nothing wrong with those forms. Like among second-generation Asians, here's the problem. A lot of second-generation Koreans or Chinese, they take the form of the mother church and they just anglicize it. And as a result, it's just, it's like, why do we do what we do? Well, we do it because that's our tradition. But that's not always the most effective way. So here's the great thing about church plants, is that you get to sort of be creative, innovative. Number five is you don't fight over picky stuff. The good thing about church plants is that the mission is more defined. If you ask an existing church why do you do what you do, most likely they'll say, well, we do this because we've always done it this way. But the reality is church plants, it's not about doing it, you know, just because we've always done it. It's about, hey, let's move forward. And you're not fighting over whether, you know, the color of the carpet. I remember when I was a EM pastor of a Korean church, I used to always get yelled at. That's the thing about the second generation. I think we all get yelled at by our parents. And so the reason I got yelled at is because we had drums in the sanctuary. And in the first gen, you don't put any drums in the sanctuary. And so I would always like get yelled at because, we don't have time to argue whether there's drums in the sanctuary. I mean, there are people going to hell, and we've got to figure out a different way to reach them. So that's part of the challenge of working in a ethnic context. But you don't have to fight over stuff like this. And so a lot of times, kind of the parent church will sort of give objections. It'll damage us if we plant. So among the second generation, a lot of the EMs can become really good incubators to plant churches, but a lot of times they won't let the second generation plant because they're afraid of losing their kids, or they're afraid that it may damage them. They also have the perspective that, don't we have enough churches? The answer to that is no. Here's an easy way for you to determine if there's enough churches. Go into any community in the U.S. It doesn't matter where you're at, and find how many churches are existing in that. Just go to the Yellow Pages. You call each of those churches up and you ask the simple question, how many people attend your service? And then you, so give them the benefit that you multiply that by two. Okay, so that's maximum occupancy twice over. Most churches don't have two services. And then you say, okay, you take that number, how many churches, how many people attend, multiply by two, and then you look at the total population of that city. And then you subtract that, and you'll find the number is staggering. Far more than the Gallup poll, which says 30% or 40% attend church. The reality is probably, in some communities, like here in Southern California, is less than 5%. I mean, there are some communities that are very, very unchurched. So those are things that we look at as well. We're not ready to start a new church. Well, the reality sometimes, you know, like we talk about having kids for those who are married. When are you, ever ready to have kids? And sometimes it takes, you just have to prepare. You have to make this as intentional part of your mission. Another one is planting costs too much. It's less costly to plant a church than to do some of these evangelistic programs. Oftentimes we spend so much money. Like in World Vision, Don, there's so many churches that waste money on all these projects that really have very little kingdom impact. But if they do something very small, then planting a church is actually very cost effective, and so forth. So these are some common objections. Now, just so quickly, a few other things. The reality of the growing unchurched in the U.S. and in Canada and North America is staggering. America has been sort of now classified as a mission field. It's the third largest mission field in the world in terms of just population size. And again, the great opportunities that we have from a sort of a diversity perspective is, I think, one of the ways in which we can reach this generation is through sort of a multicultural, multi-ethnic vision. And this is just kind of a chart that shows you on a given Sunday. Now, we talk about, Gallup has about like 30-40% at the high of how many people attend church on a given Sunday. The reality is, if you combine evangelical, mainline, and Catholic, really, it's only about 17.3. But if you just want to see how many evangelicals attend church on a given Sunday, it's less than 10%. It's 9.1. And this actually study was done in 2005, 10 years ago. This study is now much less. Again, the whole generation of the next generation, the millennials that are rising up, less and less are unchurched as well. Another just kind of a interesting fact is what we call the life cycle dynamic. The reason we need new churches and to plant new churches among your generation is this.
every church is an organic organization, meaning that it gives birth, it grows, and it dies. How many churches can exist over 100 years? How many of you have been part of churches that were 100 years and older? Okay, a few of you. Wow, so that's pretty remarkable. The reality is most churches at some point, sort of there's an end point to that. And we see this, you know, even biblically. I went to Turkey, and we did a tour of the seven churches of Asia, and we got to look at all the old sites, the city of Ephesus, the city of Smyrna, and Laodicea. None of those churches exist today. In reality, 99.8% of modern-day Turkey is Muslim. And so we see this sort of this trend of birth to maturity to decline happening. And so unless the birth rate is greater than the death rate, what's going to happen to a population? Okay. That's happening in Germany. It's happening in a lot of Western Europe. The reality is that's happening among the church culture as well. If you look at how many churches that die every year and how many churches that are given birth, you know what the ratio is? It's the opposite. Churches die more than are given birth. And as a result, the decline is staggering. So healthy denominations, there's a negative 3% growth. And among healthy churches, negative 8%, which means that we are actually on the decline. There's only one place. There are a few places outside. Like China is one of the places where actually the birth rate of the church is greater than the death rate. So that's why we need to have more babies, right? If we don't, ultimately we're going to die. I'll just skip some of this. Here's the third thing, and I think this is the most, I'll stop here. The last reason why church planting is so important for us, as we shift to the Asian American section in a few minutes, is the immigration opportunity. Is that one of the greatest opportunities for the gospel is when people do immigrate from other countries. We're going to show you a stat a little bit that shows you that when you compare the Christian or people coming from their prior culture into a new culture, there's a greater rate of acceptance. And so, for example, the number of Christians in China versus the number of Christians in Chinese Americans is there's more Christians here in the States than in terms of population. Same with the Hmong, same with the Hispanic, same with... So there is a challenge that we have, that when people immigrate, there's a greater openness to the gospel. So missions is no longer about crossing the oceans, the jungles, and the deserts, but about crossing the streets of our world cities. I think the greatest opportunity that we have is not just overseas, cross-cultural, but it's also here as well. And especially not just among the immigrant population, but among the children of immigrants. And that's what this whole context is about. So, any questions, any thoughts on this sort of a simple apologetic of why we plant? Okay. All right, we're gonna do this we're gonna change slides to the Asian American slide, and then DJ's gonna share a little bit of the stats on some of that. Let's take about a 5 minute break, so take a restroom break. And then we're gonna prepare a lunch for all you guys and bring that in as well so you can have lunch. And then conference starts at 12:30. Okay? And
can
so if you have any.
That, what you serve so far, can we get that somewhere?
Yes. Tell them how you can get that.
Is that regenerate.org?
Yeah. Go to, and you can download all this as well. And whatever information that we give you, DJ is actually writing a book on Asian American. DJ is sort of the Asian American expert in the U.S. He has a lot of stats, and he's writing a book next year on this whole sort of the Asian American context. And so DJ, that's his research background. And so my area of passion and expertise is church planting. And in 2 weeks, I'll be going to Korea and Singapore teaching on this topic as well. So anyway, let's take a few minutes. Talk with Matt if you have interest in Fuller and World Vision as well. So we'll see you guys back in about 5-10 minutes.